This is Fel Farrand. And I am driving home. It's Thursday today. We're ramping into the Valentine's Day weekend. Actually, Valentine's Day is on Monday. But we are going to do Steampunk Cupid tomorrow, so that'll be fun. Steampunk Cupid is always fun. It's red velvet leggings and like a steampunk coat and steampunk hat and all that kind of stuff. So it's fun. People seem to enjoy it. Oh, and wings. I have wings that are kind of like dragon wings. And the whole point with Steampunk Cupid is that Cupid is tired of being seen as a baby. Because he was the son, I've got to go look it up again. He was the son of Aphrodite and Mars, I think. And he was usually portrayed as a strapping young man. But over the years, he got younger, and ended up being portrayed as a baby. And then, of course, we have a donut place in town called Hertz Donuts. And on Valentine's Day, they have portly gentlemen, or a gentleman, I'm not sure, portly gentlemen dressed in their whitey tighties who deliver donuts as Cupid. And I would imagine that Cupid would not be too thrilled about that either. Because Cupid, traditionally, in the traditional sense, when you go all the way back to the beginning, he was really more like the strapping young son of Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie. That's where he would fit in the kind of structural societal hierarchy. So, yeah. So that's fun. There's plenty to work with there, and it's a good bit, and et cetera, et cetera. Had some lovely breakfast this week. Had a breakfast with a buddy this morning. Had just a lovely time chatting with him. Did have a lovely thing transpire out over the last couple of days. We'll see how this goes. The young man who is renting our rock house with his little son, he has an old clunker car, so he's hoping to get some tax money in this year to get himself a little better car, because he drives 20, 30 miles a day to get to his work and back and get to his son to daycare, and he's on the list for another daycare that's really close to his workplace, but he's not quite there yet. I think he's in the 70s now. He started out on the waiting list like well over 100. Now he's down to the 70s. He still has a little time to go. Oh, well, yesterday, he called and he said, my car's doing something really weird. I said, uh-oh. So he had gone, checked it, maybe it was spark plug. So he swapped out the spark plug last night and seemed to be better. And so then he got going today, check engine light came back on when he was leaving. I was already out to breakfast with a friend. Not that I could help when it comes to fixing cars. So, you know, he was saying, hey, do you think possibly I could borrow Lynette's car or Nana's car? And I said, yeah, just call them and see. He said, well, I'm going to go back to O'Reilly's and have them check. I said, okay, good, good. Yeah, do that. Let me know. And so, you know, it looked like, no, that's not the problem with the car, you know. You never know what's going to happen. But I keep telling him on all of these things, step at a time, step at a time. Okay, let's not borrow trouble. Let's just find out what the next thing is and then move to the next thing. So O'Reilly's was the next thing. And so he... Oh, okay, great. One moment, I had a guy pull out right in front of me who wanted to turn left, and he just swung out through traffic. So sorry about that. I had to slam on my brake a little bit. Anyways, so let me just make sure that this is actually still running. Yes, it's still running. Yay. Okay, here we go. So anyways, you know, I'm having breakfast with my friend, and you know, it's funny because after I talked to, the young man, I I didn't feel like I should jump up and run and try to find. I was just like, okay, well, let me know what you find out. The guy I was having breakfast with, I was kind of explaining the situation. He kind of looked at me, and I said, you know, we'll work through this. It'll be, you know. And I just went on because I felt like, yeah, it'll be okay. It'll be fine. And so I can't remember exactly what I said to my friend I was having breakfast with, but I basically ended the phone call and then just went right back to talking with him. And so we were talking and talking and talking, and then, I don't know, 10, 15, 20 minutes went by. Phone call, got another phone call from our renter, and I picked up the phone. He sounded better immediately. I was like, hey, what's going on? And so he said he had gotten there. They checked the code. Sure enough, it was that cylinder. It was misfiring. Still the same cylinder with the problem. And so they said, oh, it must be the wires. And he said, and then he said, I pulled off the wire that was the problem, and it had a short in it. Hey, there we go. There we go. Okay. So he said he replaced that wire. He had just replaced all the wires like 2 months ago, so he knew where they went. He popped it back in, pop, boom, everything starts running again. And I told my friend I was having breakfast with, I said, you know, it's amazing how fast things can change. You know, all of a sudden it looks like, ah, oh, he's going to have to replace the car sooner than later. Oh, what's it going to do to his finances? There's all this, and then all of a sudden it's like, click, bing, resolved. Moving on to the next thing. And we never know how those resolutions are going to come or what will be there. It is absolutely true that sometimes it won't get resolved that easily. And we will have more to do. And it will be difficult. But imagining what it's going to be before we get there is usually not going to be what happens, because the flesh will always imagine things worse. Unless you do the exercise that I like to do, and that is when the flesh is telling you that things are going to be worse, you can imagine the worst possible it can be, which is far worse than anything the flesh can imagine. And then you can imagine the best possible that it can be, which is far better than anything the flesh could possibly imagine. And then you can realize that, you know, it's probably going to be somewhere between the worst possible thing that can happen and the best possible thing that can happen. And there's no really way to know for sure. I don't know for sure how this is going to resolve. And neither does the flesh. And so when the flesh is sitting there over going, oh, that means this, oh, that means this, oh, that means that. No, 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 it really doesn't. Because nobody knows the future until we get there. And my friend that's renting the rock house from us, he went to O'Reilly's, he got a wire, put the wire on. Everything started running as normal on his car. Now, it's still an old clunker. He's still going to have to get another car at some point, but he doesn't have to get another car this week. So he buys him a little time. So there you go. God is good. The writing is going fine. I'm a little bit behind this week, but that was because we did my beloved's birthday dinner on Sunday, and so I didn't even sit down to start writing till about 5 o'clock at night, which is a lot of time to lose on a Sunday. But that's okay. We had a lovely dinner for her. And then on Tuesday, which was her actual birthday, we took a little time and played a game for a half hour or so. And so I'm a little bit behind. I'm a little bit behind. In fact, I think I'm somewhere around 1,500 words behind. But I'm rounding down. So I know what is happening in the rest of the book, and I've just got to kind of work out the final details on that. I finally figured out what the nursery rhyme was going to be. I didn't have the nursery rhyme yet, and I really wasn't that concerned about it. I was like, I'll get it. But then I decided last night that, okay, you should just stop writing and figure out what the nursery rhyme is, just to make sure that you've got it. And it's interesting the way it worked all out. The best nursery rhyme to fit in that was the one from Guy Fawkes that's based on Guy Fawkes. Remember, remember the 5th of November. Which happens to be my birthday, by the way. So that's always fun. I celebrate and pleasantly surprised, etc., etc., that my birthday is on Guy Fawkes Day. because of the whole overtones of Guy Fawkes Day. There's something about it. And then, of course, there was the movie V is for Vendetta. And there's a marvelous speech in that movie. It's just that I'm sure came from the original comic book, but it's just amazing. It's just amazing. So anyways, that's fun. So writing is going well, all is well, all is well, all is well. So I am going to have to stop as soon as I get home because it is small groups tonight. So I need to help my beloved get ready for that. And this is extremely small print on here, but I came across this article and I'm not going to do it justice because it's very small print and I will remember as much of it as I can here. But I thought this was really interesting to kind of give us a flavor of what is actually out there. The name of the article is The Battle for the World's Most Powerful Cyber Weapon. And if you had any delusions at all about how secure your information is when it's up in the World Wide Web and when it's on your phone, this article would probably disabuse you of any of those delusions. Because it talks about a company from Israel that develops cyber attack software. I believe the company is called NSO, or the NSO Group. And they are the world's most notorious makers of spyware. So apparently, the FBI had bought a version of Pegasus, which was the premier spying tool that NSO had. And they were going to demo it, and so they brought it in, and this was several years ago. I don't know, I could look in the notes, but I'm still driving, so I probably shouldn't do that. Several years ago, so they brought in all their equipment, got it all hooked up, ready to go. And then the FBI went out and bought a bunch of burner phones, got them registered, you know, took some pictures, all that kind of stuff, did some text on them, that kind of thing. Brought them in and then gave the phone numbers to the Pegasus guys, and they just typed in the phone numbers and started up their stuff, and their stuff communicated with their servers around, blah, 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 blah. And like in no time at all, they were pulling the text messages off those phones. They were pulling the pictures off the phones. They could turn on the cameras on the phones without anyone knowing. You know, they because they have, what are they called? Zero-click exploits, something like that, where you don't have to click on anything. They don't have to send you anything. And they can do this for iPhones. They can do it for Android. All you gotta know is, hey, I guess we'll target your phone. All they need is your phone number. So, there you go. Now, this NSO place only sells to government agencies. Oh, that's comforting. But they do have a wide variety of customers, and it has been known that it has been used for civil rights abuses and all that sort of thing. Supposedly, our government is not using it for that. And the article was talking about how they had kind of gotten into the U.S. was going to use it, and then the U.S. decided not to use it, and then there were some discussions about how the U.S. could use it if they routed things through here. It's a really fascinating article. But suffice it to say, what the article comes down to, and the print is too small, and I'm going to need to get started as soon as I get home. But suffice it to say that these tools are out there, and they are being used by governments. And if we think that all of the falderall that comes out of iPhone and Android about security and how safe your stuff is on your phone, if we would like to think that's true, that's one thing. It is true that the information going from the phones to, like, the storage and things is encrypted, and it is doing that. But as this article pointed out, this NSO company said that, well, you know, that transmission of that data might be pretty hard to crack because of the encryption and stuff, but, you know, why don't we just go ahead and get it before it goes encrypted? So they have all these researchers, and they sit around all day, and they just hit on these phones and hit on them and hit them on all the latest phones, on all the latest updates, to see if those zero-click exploits have been patched. And they don't tell anybody about them. They just use them. And they are whole teams of people, and their whole job is to figure out where these exploits are in these phones so that they can just contact your phone and have it start dumping stuff. So, okay, so there you go. And they were saying that, you know, there's all kinds of dictatorial regimes that things got sold to, and then there was some kind of falderall going on where the United States was, you know, it suddenly kind of turned against them and put them on some kind of a blacklist, and then their company was going down, and then Israel got upset about it. Because Israel, it's a company in Israel, and the clear implication was that it didn't really matter who they sold their software to, that the company in Israel was loyal to the Israeli government, which means there's probably some back doors built into this stuff so that the Israeli government can look at whatever they want. So, yeah, it's an interesting world, you know? And I think what this illustrates for us is that we have to understand that anything that you do online, anything you do with your phone at any time, is probably available to a much wider audience than you think. One of the interesting things to me that I've got going right now is that I read an article about how you can request from Amazon.com all the information they know about you. I thought, well, that might be interesting. So there's a place on Amazon where you can go. The article had a link to it, where you can request the personal information that Amazon has about you. So I requested it and told them that, yeah, I just want everything. What do you got? It's going to be very interesting to see what actually comes up. It hasn't arrived yet. It may have arrived today, and I just didn't pick it up yet. But I am very interested to see what they say. And I would be interested to see what somebody like a Google says or somebody like a Facebook says. Because I've mentioned in the past, Amazon, they recommend all sorts of things for me. Because I do buy a lot of different stuff from them. And one can easily see. And I have mentioned before that on Facebook, typically what Facebook puts into my feed is stuff that I can tell people congratulations for. It's people celebrating milestones and achievements and birthdays and anniversaries and all those types of things. And, you know, because that's what I purposely I interact with on Facebook. I purposely do things that I can say, hey, congratulations, or hey, happy birthday, or happy anniversary. And so all that noise of so-and-so, rah, so-and-so, rah. I don't get that on my Facebook stuff. I do get that on my YouTube feeds because I listen to a lot of different stuff on YouTube. And frankly, on YouTube this week, oh man, last week, maybe it's been since, I don't know. Maybe I had listened to it last week. I listened to the Candace Owens interview of Robert Malone. That was really fascinating. And it was very settling in a way. It really made me see the whole COVID thing in a different light. And in fact, kind of, I thought, oh, okay, so this all makes sense. Because what came out of that interview between Candace Owens and Robert Malone is the fact that all this stuff that's been going on with COVID, it's really nothing new. We just didn't pay attention to the fact that it was going on underneath the scene, because we don't really have a health industry in general, on average, when in totality, we don't really have a health organization and a health infrastructure that is dedicated to the health of the populace, trying to make sure that people are living their best lives. What we have is an industrial complex that sells people drugs and that exists so that the medical industry can make a profit. And that medical industry is very happy to spend a lot of time pumping a lot of money into a lot of politicians' pockets and lobbying them as to the which way things should go. And what becomes very apparent when you just step back and look at this whole COVID thing is that there is a lot of entities inside the medical establishment that have made a lot of money. And at the end of the day, that's really what most of this has been about. All the odd decisions, all the weird things that just went missing in terms of maybe we should do some treatment for people before they get to the hospital, all that stuff. It just all comes back to money, greed, comes back to fear, all that stuff. It's just all flesh-driven. And it's a fascinating, fascinating thing. I'm now going back to Joe Rogan's interview of I've missed his name, Peter McCullough. I'm going back to Joe Rogan's interview of Peter McCullough. Because there sounded like there was some interesting information in there. And one of the pieces that came out of that that was really fascinating was that I'm up to the point now where Joe Rogan talked to Peter McCullough about the early, early days of COVID. And Peter McCullough was talking about the fact that he said, I decided I was going to dedicate all my attention to this. He was a very well-respected doctor, well-published doctor, very knowledgeable. And he said, so I was corresponding with doctors around the world saying, okay, it's in Italy. I was corresponding with the doctors in Milan. Do you have anything that you found that can slow this thing down? What are you doing for pre-treatment? You know, what are you doing for, is there any kind of prophylactics that we can take to keep people from getting this? You know, I was going through all this stuff. And he said, and I was meeting with doctors and we were talking about it and I let it go, you know, for weeks. And then finally, at some point, he said, when are we going to start talking about preventative measures and early treatment? And he said, you could hear a pin drop. Nobody was interested. And Joe Rogan had asked Peter McCullough, why do you think that was? Why were people not interested in preventative treatment or in therapies when people caught COVID? And Peter McCullough said, you know, I saw a lot of fear. I just saw a lot of fear. Because this was kind of the first time that doctors could potentially die from treating their patients. And that fear pulled them back. So a lot of the early days in COVID. That makes perfect sense. It makes perfect sense because the flesh would just, of course, push people towards the worst possible conclusion or nearly the worst. You treat those patients, you're going to die. Okay. And so the doctors just kind of pull back. Well, I don't want those people coming into my waiting room. No, just stay at home and just drink some fluids and hope you get feeling better soon. And then if it gets really bad, just go to the emergency room, go to the hospital. You know, that makes perfect sense. It makes perfect sense why there wouldn't be protocols. Because it was just easier to say, just wait until you need to go to the emergency room and then the hospitals will take care of you. So it's fascinating stuff. It's fascinating stuff. And then you put that together with the vaccine stuff and with the pharmaceutical companies. I read a headline. So Pfizer pulled in $53 billion based on the vaccines and medicines. So there's a lot of money to be made. But you know what? God is kind. He's good. He's gentle. He's with us. And he is wonderful. He is wonderful to whisper to us and communicate his love with us every day. This is Phil Ferriant, and I have made it home.